leave this world. From millions of light years away, I approach your planet. Soon my spaceship lands on Earth. I need your world. I feed on fear, live on human hatred. I, a strong mind without flesh or blood, want your...
I don't know why it ended!
Yes, I'm not easy to get along with, am I? This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. This is FilmSack. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack's episode 212. 212 of these damn things. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined this afternoon on the show that digs to the bottom of the freaking barrel of movies and then licks it twice. Joining me today, Brian, creepy dude in the shed, Dunaway.
How appropriate. Dearest family in the big house, I have been watching you through my tiny window. You think I'm dumb because I can't talk? While technically that is the definition of dumb, I think you are confusing dumb with stupid. But who is the stupids now? You think my coffee maker in the desert hole is a spaceship? I just took it out there because the humming was making the dog bark like a human. But still, you persist. I was hoping that throwing all the dead birds at your car would stop you from messing with it, but no. No, no, no. Now you got the sheriff involved. I'm going to chop you all up with my axe real soon. Yeah. Hugs and kisses. Yeah. Carl. Oh. My name is Carl. Oh. Not him. Okay. Carl.
Not him? All right. We thought it was him.
I thought it was him. Loomis. Him. Kept calling him Loomis.
Loomis. Nice. Also with us, Randy. Try using a rake on that cow, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hello.
Did you know that I used to work on a palm tree farm out in the desert back in the day?
Do tell.
True story.
You don't States. Say.
There are only two keys to getting the palm trees to produce. One, you have to plant them in a perfect matrix of rows and columns. And two, you have to surround them with certified crazy people. So I fit right in. And I learned an important lesson. Guys, your minds are valuable and capable of love. And that love is your most powerful weapon against an alien force encased in a mini fridge.
Right. Very nice. And then rounding us out, Brian, did you bring a mic, Ibbit?
I can't believe they made such a shitty adaptation of the game Angry Birds. But I guess that's what you get when you trust the American Releasing Corporation.
Oh, my gosh.
The American Releasing Corporation. What a weird name.
Hey, guys, how many times can we use the footage of those birds coming at us without getting in trouble?
Bits of birds.
Eight times.
American Releasing Corporation kind of sounds like they go around dumping poop.
Yeah. Like, oh, I was going to say, like, releasing and Americans.
They did.
Yeah, they dumped some
kind of freedom fighters.
But, right, Brian? Like, oh, yeah, we what'd you guys do today? Well, we did a release down on the beach and we.
Hold on, I'm releasing.
See? We did a release in the sewer on 4th Street.
Roger Corman did at the end of this movie.
We did a bunch of releasing in theaters across the country.
America.
Yeah, of America. Of America. Yeah, the movie's The Beast with a Million Eyes. And
none of them were looking at the footage.
Yeah, and don't get excited about seeing some creature with a million eyes, because you won't really get one.
That's probably the biggest spoiler alert in the film. About 10 minutes to go in the movie, and I suddenly started just saying out loud, we're not going to get to see a beast with a million eyes. Yep. We're not going to get to see a beast at all. There's no beast.
You were right. There was none. They used some spiders from another movie to do kind of a weird dream kind of psycho sequence, but that didn't even have a million eyes. That had maybe four or six eyes at the most.
Right. It had the spider from that... Two. The other one we saw, like the Mars one where they tinted everything red.
Oh,
The
Red Planet Mars.
Mars. Was it Red Planet Mars?
Yeah, I don't know. Minority Report. That's the one you're thinking. I think, was it the same spider? I knew it was reused from somewhere because they didn't have the
really
money.
Similar. Yeah.
They were supposed to spend $100,000 on this movie. They ended up with $30,000 to work with.
Fox spider bat combo thing.
Yeah.
And at the time, $30,000 was like $1 million.
No, it was a lot of money, right? But I mean, okay. So if your whole overall budget is $100,000 and you're down to $30,000, and it's 1955, and if you account for inflation, this would be like, you've got $100 million to make the next Waterworld. Oh, sorry, we're down to, you know, $30 million.
Something like that.
Yeah, there's the math. And, something like that.
And apparently, good actors weren't that expensive back in the day. Like they are now. Could, not like they
could,
are now.
You could get the Marlboro Man for practically nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. You could get Uncle Cletus to stand around and not say anything all day long.
Yeah,
right. Right, doing his pantomime cold water dance.
Boy, it doesn't take this movie very long to demonstrate why we no longer ever see mutes in movies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
that
this is true.
Not a thing. It's like they don't do quicksand anymore, and you never see a guy who can't speak.
Well, him, a.k.a. Carl, Leonard Tarver.
Carl.
He was in two movies. He was in 1955's The Beast with a Million Eyes, and then uncredited in something called The Lonesome Trail in 1955, same year, and that's it.
Wow.
No other jobs, no other worker, no other Hollywood stuff.
Well,
that was it.
It wasn't like this was like a breakout role for him or something.
No, it wasn't. He just seemed pervy.
No, but this would make you give up on the industry, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it might. He just seemed pervy to me. Like just
yeah. Well, all the pinups on the wall and
The way he was looking at that stuff. Was like, oh,
the locking of the door and then going and reading the pinup magazine. Yeah. That was
for half a minute. I thought his black and white wiener was going to come out.
Right.
That means it worked, though, right? That was the point.
Right.
To give you that feeling?
I guess, yeah. I mean, I have to feel like it landed more creepy on me than it would have in 1955 because it was such a stereotype of like, oh, he's into looking at the pinup, see? But to them, that was even just like, I mean, that was pretty churchy.
He was a deviant. He was, you know, that thing that's where I was kind of getting towards. He was kind of like a deviant. But I liked the fact that he was kind of like that because you needed something to be scared of. And I certainly wasn't scared of the teapot in the crater. So.
You know why you weren't? Because you've already seen a version of what's the movie we saw at Nerdtacular? My brain just went dead.
Maximum Overdrive? This was Maximum Overdrive in the 50s.
Yeah.
And
oh God,
the alien controls animals instead of machines.
That's totally what this was. Like I kept getting that vibe the entire time and the same frustration, less humor, but you know, the same kind of vibe of, oh, it's all falling apart, Bill, or whatever his name was. I don't think I could live in this desert hellhole much longer. And then, you know, the teapot's yelling at her and the freaking, the dog, the cow, what else? What else came after him? Birds.
It was pretty much the dogs, the cow.
Yeah.
And
you can't make a dog sound like that, but you can definitely make Brian Dunaway sound like that.
Right. Totally.
Well, here's Fletcher will explain more. He's got a little more of the plot under his sleeve, and he's going to share it with us now. Scott Fletcher, take it away.
The Beast with 1 million eyes. In a scarcely populated wasteland, a powerful alien touches down and begins to wield his destructive influence over anyone or anything in its path.
Oh, gosh. That sounds worse than it was. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not an accurate portrayal of what happened in the movie at all, I don't think.
Yeah, but it's funny because when I told a friend of mine that this was the movie we were watching, he's like, I've never even heard of it. And he immediately went to his phone and pulled up the trailer for it.
Yeah.
And he played it for me, like he watched it and said, all right, well, this is it. And then he played it for me. It's like, wow, this sounds kind of interesting. Mm, right. But holy cow, the trailer doesn't do a job of painting the picture of what this movie is.
So the trailer, yeah, here's a trailer. Just for fun, let's just play part of it.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is it'll be similar to that ilk.
From billions of light years away, I approach your planet.
All right, same guy, it's talking. Okay, now they're just... Now they're reminding me why the movie almost made my ears bleed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. That humming. That they kept describing it as a humming, but it was more like after someone hears after a shell shock or something. It's kind of that ringing. Yeah, sounded like a ringing.
Like a grenade just went off.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all that trailer is. There's a little narration in the rest.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
But there is a little bit of some more narration, but it's like all these interestingly cut scenes from the movie. Without the crappy dialogue, without the nonsensical plot. I think you barely even see the coffee pot in the desert. But there's something very intriguing about that trailer that is completely missing from the rest of the movie.
Did I maybe it's editing. That much editing made it really interesting.
Yeah, maybe.
But was there a ship that landed and took off?
Yeah, for some reason,
I have blacked out on that visual.
The shot of the ship taking off is the worst thing in the movie. It's even worse than the
Eyewitness is not the worst thing.
I think the cow attack, the way the cow attack had to be edited together to make it look like...
You mean this big, slow cow that's barely moving, looking all menacing?
Bessie, no!
They had old man Jackson fall backwards, and then they just kept kind of swinging the camera toward him while he just lays there and looks stunned.
Right. Was it Sharon, or what was what was the name exactly of the cow?
The cow had a name.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the guy that watched the cow. So in the movie, he is known as, hold on, here he is. He is
the silent screen actor,
Ben Weber. His name's Chester Corklin.
Right.
And that dude has got a resume, man. Like, born in the late 1800s, but did every movie ever, I swear, straight up until 1966, which is just before he died. He died in the 70s, but it was the last movie he made in 66. Anyway, he has been making movies since the silent era, since 1913.
Right.
Some old silent shorts, and then worked his way up through the heyday of Westerns. Like, in every John Ford, Peckinpah, doesn't matter who made a Western, that dude's in it as somebody. As names like Mort and Eli, Perkins, Burke, Elmer. Like, if these don't sound like that guy was just made for every one of these jobs. Lem, L-E-M.
Lem, what a great old name.
And he entertained me in a very old timey way, like a very even his stupid water pantomime thing you're talking about, Ibbot, was like kind of entertaining in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was out of place and felt dumb in this movie, but
no, but there was something kind of, you know, charming vaudeville about it. You know,
yeah, like, he was the comic relief.
Yeah. Really, but
when push it. Comes to shove, there's something weird about someone who works with cows not being able to walk out of a shed, hop over a fence, and get away from a cow that attacks them. That's just weird.
Well, he's old, man.
But that's like, it's like Brian, do you remember when your kids were little? Like after a few years of working with your kids, if one of them decided to attack you, you would have just gotten away. You would have known to walk away. Like, it's just weird.
The cow had mad cow disease. It was
right. The cow goes crazy, and he for some reason lays there and is just like, "Come get me."
Well, that's the whole trope of horror movies anyway. And this is pretty on in that era. In the 1950s, of people falling down and then not able to get up, and you're screaming at the screen going, "Get up, for God's sakes, get up."
Yeah, I call that the forearm performance, where they put their forearm in front of their face.
Right, to block them. Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No. My arm will save me. Yeah.
It totally won't.
And that cow was just not threatening at all.
No. Right. You don't think so? I thought
no.
He was... Well, I'm kind of scared of cows, so maybe that was...
You should be. They can kill you.
they can
kill you.
But when you're working with cows, you know how to get away.
Yeah.
Right.
He just sort of flop onto the ground. Well, I guess he got blown out of there first, right? And that was to...
No, he ran out of there right before the stool and the bucket got kicked out.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. I was thinking he got kicked out, but it was the bucket and the stool.
No, he ran out of there, and then the bucket and the stool out of there.
It was a painfully long scene. I think if that would have been edited a little bit quicker, maybe we could have all went, "Oh yeah, that happened really fast, and that was super scary."
And here's the key, folks: when you're making a movie where the animals go crazy, or where anybody goes crazy and attacks people, focus on the attacker, not the person being attacked.
Yeah.
Like when the dog goes nuts, they focus on the dog, and it works better. It's still stupid, but it works better.
Did it look like they were torturing that poor dog? Because he was really. Yeah. Pissed. I mean, that didn't look like trainer bark stuff. Man, that looked like somebody's holding him down or electrocuting him or something. Yeah.
When the tail is down like that and the dog is looking really scared and nervous, more like it's like
baring its teeth because it doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
I thought I had parvo.
I can relate, dude.
Well, there's a note in the trivia that says they didn't have the money to do what they wanted to do, and the only way they could make it work is they had to go to Van Nuys and take and do all non-union crew sets and stuff.
Well, they didn't go to Van Nuys. They went out in the middle of the desert. They went out to Palm Springs.
That's what I meant to say. I'm sorry. Palm Springs is what I meant. Why did I say Van Nuys? Anyway, they went out there because they had no money, and they used non-union everything, and that leads me to believe. And plus, you know, talking about an era where I don't know that there was that much control over animal trainer stuff or animal safety or any None. Of that, or even people safety for that matter.
It was just one of the actor's dogs they brought from home.
Probably.
This is how it was.
Come here, Shep. Another dog, day at the movies.
Come here, Hitler. German Shepherd.
That dog would have been, like, do that movie today, that dog would have been, like, I don't know, much better behaved, or would have been less obvious that somebody kept calling his name off set, because you could see him just like jerking around and stuff. And then when he did the freak out part, you would have like CGI'd that up or something. Mm-hmm. Like the cow would have been CGI, dude.
The cow was actually scared. It had it foaming and everything. Yeah.
Cow was not
this scary. Cow was never
I've actually,
scary.
I've actually spent a lot of time thinking about how you would remake this movie and rewrite it to make it really good.
Ooh, and let's talk about it. Let's do a remake. What do you do?
I thought it was actually written pretty well.
Like, for starters, I was blown away at how Palm Springs used to look.
Hold on. Before you continue, and I do not want you to stop, but I want right. to just make sure everyone else heard Brian just say you think the writing was pretty good. Did everyone else hear that?
Okay, come on. Let's back it up.
Come on.
Okay, no. I'm not going to defend it because it was a piece of crap. It was made for, equivalent of today's $2 million. But come on, let's face it. The dialogue is pretty sci-fi, and it wasn't too bad. The writing was not that bad.
It was pretty bad.
It was actually pretty smart, considering this is 1955 and we're starting to explore the concepts of
sci-fi. I'm actually sticking with my partner here. I agree that there is the seed of something good here, and I want to go through the thought experiment of making it better, because it starts, you have to start with good. If it was just all bad all the way around, you couldn't fix it, right?
Oh, I agree. Seed, yeah. But this is, let's say
a little bitty tiny seed.
I planted that seed, and then I shit in the bucket, and then I peed on it.
That's how you make stuff grow. You have to crap in the bucket to make
you
it grow.
Need fertilizer. Yeah.
Right?
I quit talking to it. Got no sunlight. The plant was dead when it sprouted. Anyway, Randy, back to you were on the road to recovery here.
Yeah, I was just going to start with Palm Springs. Seeing it without all the golf courses and streets, really amazing. And it made me realize, wow, this is first and foremost about setting, this kind of thing. Because setting is like, it's like your biggest character in your movie. And I felt like they didn't really make use of it. I kept getting little glimpses of, ooh, this is a creepy place they're in.
Right.
Like I mentioned, the palm trees all in perfect rows, right?
Mm-hmm.
That why didn't they spend a little more time shooting out in that, because it's so creepy?
Yeah. Have no time. They shot it in like 40 days or something, didn't they? It was pretty fast.
I forgot. They did say how long, but the
you
night
can tell this movie was rushed.
Well, the night stuff's hard because these old black and whites, every time we've seen one, and I like it when we do these, by the way. I get excited about old stuff, because it's just a fun, it's nice to insert those occasionally back when, nobody really knew what they were doing. They're still acting like they're on a stage. Like, it's just a different era, and I kind of dig
it.
It was
very stage.
But when they film at night, it just, the results are just so spotty and bad, because they didn't have the cameras for it. The black and white doesn't do well in that environment, although there's a lot of cool stuff now that does. But then again, we got techniques now to do that. Like, back then, it just looked dark, and you can't tell what's going on. And that teapot thing, and just, that stuff was bad. And I agree with you about the location. That stuff's amazing. It's mysterious and weird. You can go crazy with it.
And so I got to thinking, I would probably set my remake on a farm like they did. And I'd probably go like with the M. Night Shyamalan way.
I was about to say, are you remaking Signs? Is that what you're doing? Because that sounds exactly
well,
like
that. Yeah. Close. Because I mean, you've got your alien. You've got...
Yeah.
Right?
And it works.
Your water, like, contingent. Yeah.
You know, farms can... there's a reason so many horror movies are on farms, because you're separated from everybody else. There's no neighbors around for miles. There's no, there's no humanity. It's just all this big empty space. And that's one of the things I thought worked. And I just felt like, gosh, they never once really used that in this movie.
Right.
Like, they didn't ever once like pull the camera back. There were a couple of like stock photos of the desert, and the stock footage. How did anybody ever put up with shots that don't look like the rest of the shots in the film?
Oh, I know. They're so starkly different. What was that big lizard one we saw where they kept the 50,000
Godzilla
under the sea, something, whatever the hell it was.
That was by me last week.
But they kept showing like military rocket footage.
Fathoms. Yeah, that was usually... Isn't that bundled with this one, or is that the 100,000?
That's a different
fathoms?
One. No, it's the Phantom of 10,000 Leagues or something.
That's
like that.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Phantom of 10,000 Leagues.
Confused.
That's the one. Yes. Yeah. You know what? You could make a really fun app, like an old 50s horror movie generator, you know, and just put in a couple of keywords easily. And then the creature from above the under, you know, all this bullcrap.
Right. Exactly.
But
there's a new movie out this about underneath the catacombs of New York or something crazy. It's like
Under Stupid Over.
What is it?
Under Stupid Over. That's the one.
Under Stupid Over. That's
that
it.
One.
Crap. I saw a little teaser thing for this. I know what you're talking about. Right, I'm all for that kind of thing to come back, and I'm all for, like, you know, look. I'm not a giant fan of Pacific Rim, but I like the idea that you're bringing back giant monster movies, and the Godzilla is a better example of what I like about those. And, like, let's have a new era of giant scorpions and stuff. I'm into all that stuff. That's great. But what you miss out on is just the unintentional cheese. The problem I had with this movie was I never quite knew if it wanted to be like a really smart psychological thriller.
Right,
or if it wanted to go just straight to the neck, kind of, you know, cheeseball horror. And I couldn't tell if it ever, I couldn't really feel like it succeeded on either of those levels. And I wanted it to. That seed you're talking about is there. There's a psychological thing you could do here. And you know, the idea that all the stuff around you is turning on you is interesting, or can be, you know, giant boulders chasing your RV in the desert.
Especially if the things turning on you is what drives people crazy. One of the huge mistakes of this movie is that it starts out with people kind of being crazy already.
Right. A little bit of cabin fever, a little bit of space madness. Yeah,
which I didn't like that aspect of it. Like, I kind of wanted these people to start out totally cool. And in the very first, like, sentence that the wife delivers, it's demonstrated that she's crazy.
She hates her daughter and hates where they are and
she
can't make a souffle to save her life.
She seemed,
and so then I'm like, okay, well, this is going to be character development the other way.
She's completely unable to clean the side of the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Did anyone else notice that?
No, I didn't notice that. So
there's a big splatter on the side of the refrigerator in the background when she was talking to us.
I hope that she was driven crazy by that picture of that little boy on the wall, because I was going to kill myself if I had to see that too much.
Was that kid holding a flower or a rifle? What was he holding?
Was he holding a guitar?
I don't know
what he was holding, but it was bad.
Oh, it was right next to her china or glass, or her next to the good glassware. It was odd. But yeah, the space. Yeah. I think the whole thing, the reason why they didn't develop the characters, Randy, one of the things that bothered you about it, is this was only a 75-minute movie, and it was probably just down to, like, well, how many feet of film do we have? Well, you know.
Right.
It's like we're making a 75-minute movie. Let's go.
But it's just weird to me that, like, all the shots of that china cabinet after the earthquake, and everything's all busted, and they never once really used it. Like, it was just background for people to stand in front of and say whatever came to mind.
Oh, it was very stagey, like Scott was saying earlier. I mean, this whole thing felt like a stage play that was just filmed.
Well, the in-the-house stuff was all stage. Anyway, real stage. And then that's why the door swung the wrong way when they went outside. Like, she would open it inward and then go outside, and it would open outward. The windows were there on the inside, but on the outside there were no windows right there by the door. Like, things like that would happen. And that's fine. I appreciate it when continuity, things like that happen, because you're so low on budget and you don't have the cash to do it. I just wish they would have decided kind of what they wanted to be and then stick to that. So...
Yeah.
You know, everybody loves Hitchcock and everybody wants to be Hitchcock. And this movie, a couple of moments in it, even were trying to be the birds from Hitchcock.
Right.
But they're trying to kind of find
that.
Was this
pre or post birds?
This would have been post, I think.
Oh, really? I thought it'd be pretty close.
You know what? I'm going to find out. Is it just the birds?
Yeah, I think it's just, I'm looking at birds movie.
The Hitchcock one?
Oh, I was wrong. That was 63.
1963.
Yeah, that's way later. Yeah. Still black and white, though, isn't it?
So the common theme is they're both black and white.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have birds in them.
But he was, I mean, Hitchcock was doing other stuff in the 50s,
he was working back then,
Yeah, like 58 was Vertigo, 54 is Rear Window. So, like, real smart Hitchcockian stuff, well, literally from Hitchcock, was happening a year before this did. This reminds me of, like, what's it like? It's like... somebody will do something now, and it kind of takes on becomes popular to make movies like it. I can't think. Let's say teenage young adult novel movies, all right? Like, you know, Hunger Games and whatever. The good ones come out, and they're great, but then somebody wants to make, you know, another one, and it's kind of mediocre and no big deal. Like that Maze Runner. There's no mage in there. It might be better.
There might be a mage, but he's also running.
Right. But like, you know, for a while there, I thought we were going to get a lot more vampire-y things because of the stupid Twilight books and just a lot of mediocre stuff came out after. Right. This feels like one of those mediocre, let's get on the bandwagon deals.
It does. It feels like another young adult novel translated into where the kids are all, you know, it's a oppressive society. The kids are turning things around. They're the revolution.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, also budgetary concerns kicking in here. Because of budgetary concerns and considerations, the monster ended up being a tea kettle with a lot of holes in it.
I think that was written. I saw that in the trivia as well. I think that's just written by some disgruntled person who ended up seeing the film.
That looks like a tea kettle. That's full of crap.
I love the name of it. I mean, I just love the matter of fact language of it. It's just a tea kettle with a lot of holes in it. let's see. James A. Nicholson, H. Nicholson had come up with a tremendous ad and title and pre-sold the movie to exhibitors. And this might be this teaser you're talking about.
And that's the way exactly the way it feels. It feels like there was a very good marketing contingent to come along with all these horror movies from the 50s. And then they was like, oh, we got to deliver this.
Well, it says this. When they made the film, the distributors of the film were pissed. They were disappointed because the ads were more interesting than the actual film turned out. So I think it speaks to exactly what you were saying. Nice job on the trailers, guys. Terrible job on the movie.
Exactly.
Nice to know that was alive and well in the 50s.
Well, it's funny to hear that the trailer was made at such a different time than the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and if you look at the poster, there's no doubt that the poster was made before the movie. There's nothing in the poster is actually in the movie, but it's a very compelling poster. It makes me want to go see it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I was, when we first, this came up, I went, oh yeah, that's in our wheelhouse. I don't think I had any, I mean, if I'd have known what the movie actually was, I probably would have argued against it because it just isn't what it purports to be.
I think the infamy of this movie, I think the one thing that keeps this movie on people's radars is the fact that it was such a disappointment as far as the expectations considered. What happened? You know, it's like, okay, it wasn't even close to a million eyes, but they say it right at the front in their opening description that, you know, that he doesn't have a million eyes. He has a million spies. Basically,
he has the birds, it's the bugs, right. It's the cow, whatever.
Right.
Oh, and
right.
I totally get that. And I think it's clever. I'm saying if you have such a good idea, yeah, don't show me a beast with a bunch of eyes on its face, you know, on the poster.
Because that's its flat out lying.
Because at the end, I wanted the end of the movie to be that narrator guy, but in the persona of a big rubber suited million eye creature that finally went, "You have discovered my plan," and they just have this like dialogue at the end, and it never came to that.
And the reason why we even have the stupid bat monster thing anyway is because the people who were gonna publish this, I suppose, they said, no, you gotta at least have something in here, you gotta at least have some kind of creature at the end, because I don't even think that was in the original plan to have the beast with at least two or three eyes.
I found the data. The giant motorized spiders were used by director Burns in the Queen from Outer Space. It was Queen from Outer Space and Valley of the Dragons. I've never heard of either of those things. We never did those movies.
No one's brought up the intro, like the opening credit scene, with kind of the cool artwork.
Best thing in the movie.
Yeah, the beasts. But you see like beasts that could have a million eyes. They have just a couple.
At least two or three,
Yeah.
They were all watching, and that was
really cool.
It was creepy.
Yeah, the original title was going to be The Unseen, and that would have been a better title, more appropriate title, but I don't think it would have I don't think we would have even seen this movie if it had been called The Unseen.
Well,
I don't even think it would even exist.
The poster is still the problem. Like, if you're gonna
think the poster is still the problem.
Well, it is, because it says to me that there's a big giant creature with a bunch of eyes.
Right.
Because that's what that thing shows. This is like saying, I don't know. Okay. Here we go with I can't think of a movie.
What if Jurassic Park had a park?
Yes. Or better yet, what if Jurassic Park had a bunch of dinosaurs on the front and they didn't have any in the movie?
Right? Like, you think anybody was ticked because there was no roller coasters in Jurassic Park? You think they were?
No, but there's no indication
there was no park and no dinosaurs, and it had really been more about what goes on in a lab. Like, you would have been totally cheated.
Right. Or if a giant one-eyed gorilla with a cyborg arm is on the front of Sophie's Choice, you're going to have a problem when you see the movie and realize there is no one-armed cyborg gorilla.
Cyborg named Sophie.
Right.
Yeah.
And whose choice is it anyway?
Right.
Exactly. Corman was so unsatisfied with the way the film progressed, says here that he took over the directorship from David Kermarski and gave him no credit. Like, none. It's like, you're out, buddy.
Corman got no credit either, right?
Who? Oh, Corman Roger Corman. No yeah.
No, right. He did it uncredited.
You said Dick Corman because I think you were thinking of Dick Sargent, who is in this freaking movie. Darren Stevens, baby.
Our second Darren.
He was number two,
was
right?
Was he the replacement Darren? Or
he was the replacement Darren.
Yeah, because Dick Sargent, Dick York was the, he was the original guy.
Right.
Attention, Dick Sargent.
What happened to Dick York? It had some terrible thing happen, right? Wasn't it some?
He was the one with AIDS.
It's always
right?
something terrible before 1980.
He might. You're right.
It is.
Dick York, here it is. He lived from 28 to 92, died at the age of 63. He died from, was it AIDS?
Well, I don't know. It's funny because they would have called
before
it.
Before there would have even been,
Right. They would have called it a virus.
It's before the.
Before we started calling it.
I thought there was some.
I'm looking it up.
I thought it was more recent too. Maybe it was the other
Hitchcock Sergeant. Personal quotes, something. Maybe it's not him.
Why don't you just look up?
We have besmirched Dick York. I don't know what's wrong. Maybe everything was just fine. Maybe he was just sick of it. He didn't want to be typecast as Darren Stevens, even though he got totally typecast as
Dick York.
No, it was Dick Sargent. I'm looking on IMDb. Where is it here?
Oh, Dick Sargent died that way.
Yes. Let's see. He later revealed to the world he was homosexual after tabloid papers began to refer to a serious illness as AIDS-related. Sargent died in 1994, having lived out his last few years openly and contentedly. So I had the wrong.
You had the wrong Darren. Isn't that the way we get the wrong Darren every time?
And see, I'm this is riveting.
But it was prostate cancer, not AIDS.
I'm saying that when these older guys before about 1980, when they died, it was always he got an infection from opening a beer. bottle. And it's always crap like that.
He was filming in like Tanzania and got a worm or something.
Yeah,
there's always these fake stories. That's true.
That's amazing because I always thought
Dickie and got dengue fever.
Dengue fever.
Yeah,
I hate when I get dengue fever.
That's the worst.
That's the absolute worst.
Boat too long.
I thought Dick York actually died.
He did.
He did eventually, but he didn't stop the show because
it wasn't
died.
The show.
No,
yeah, I have a real memory of that, of Dick York dying in some horrible way, very young and not in his 60s, in the 90s,
No, right. he actually died a couple of years before Dick Sargent. They died within a couple of years of each other. And why did he leave Bewitched?
Yeah, what's going on?
Now
with
we want to know. Now we got to know why.
And why do we all have the shared memory? This has come up before on Film Set.
Yeah, what is
like
that?
Serious. I want to do serious acting. I don't want to do this sitcom BS.
It's like the most famous thing I will ever do.
Right.
Elizabeth Montgomery died in 1995. They're all dying right after each other.
Wow. Yeah. 92, 94, 95.
Well, I was about that age.
It was the Bewitched curse.
Is no one alive yet or left from
the Bewitched curse?
Who's the daughter? The daughter, I'm sure, is still alive.
Tabitha.
Yeah.
Wow. She's in some weird movies. All right. Anyway.
So was he bedridden? Okay. So he had a temperature of 105. So he must have been very sick.
Hot blooded.
Yeah, right. I was just thinking of that song.
He must have had some sickness during that time. Maybe that's the reason why he was off.
In Elizabeth Montgomery. Here we go. Ready?
Mm-hmm. Right.
She was diagnosed. Oh, she had colorectal cancer. That's not fun. Mm-hmm. She had originally thought she just had flu-like symptoms. She was doing a Deadline for Murder guest spot. I don't remember that. At the time of the intervention, she died 8 weeks later. Ugh, I don't like that cancer. That's bad business. Let's move on.
This is the worst derail we've ever had.
Yeah, that's bad. It's going nowhere good.
It is.
Here, this will help you. Tabitha, Erin Margaret Murphy, who played the character for a long time. There were actually a lot of little girls who played the role of Tabitha. But Erin Murphy was one of the longest running because she shared the role with her fraternal twin sister.
Oh, so it's kind of like the first Olsen twins in.
Right, exactly. Years. Still alive and age 50, looks great.
Oh, look at her.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no curse.
Brian walks us to the light.
She's lovely. Look at her. She's totally, Well, her hair's a little weird. But anyway, she's totally fine.
What's weird about her hair?
I don't know. This one photo.
All right. To bring it back around, can we talk about mom's baking? She never successfully baked anything during this whole movie.
No.
She slams her hand on the stove, and then apparently that made her souffle fall.
You know why, don't you? Here's why. Women can't do anything about a man without a man. They got to have the man.
This is true. This is true. But I hate that. Did you guys have did your mom bake a lot when y'all were kids?
Yeah.
And she would yell at you when you would run through the house. Is that still a thing? Do people still yell at their kids for running through the house?
My
you're
wife.
Gonna break this. The souffle is gonna go flat.
I don't think it was because the cake or something was going to go bad. But Kimmel, like, if the kids are roughhousing and throwing crap, and she's trying to focus on making, you know, brownies or something, she'll go, "You guys, calm down." That kind of thing,
right?
But never. I don't think it's ever like my souffle is going to fall if you guys run.
I think it's a thing. It used to be a thing.
All right. Well, you're in the South.
I'm in the South.
Yeah.
I'd get the backhand if I ran through the house too much.
While the baking was going on, or just in general.
Just in general. The baking had nothing to do with it.
Right. So I can see Randy now running through the house, having a good time, laughing. All of a sudden, a hand outside from behind a door somewhere. Bah!
Yeah. Randy Montgomery Jordan, get in here right now.
I have no idea if my mom ever has
Randy,
once listened
Milhouse
to Film
Jordan,
Sack.
You get back in the house right
Milhouse
now.
Milhouse Jordan.
I just want to state for the record, my mom is an inspirational cook
saint.
In the oven.
Yes, she is.
In World of Warcraft, she is way of the oven. She is, she is amazing. I could never bake as good as my mom, and I wish I could.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a huge loss to humanity when she stops baking.
Yeah, my mom's similar place. I feel like there's a generation gap between that group of women who knew how to bake like nobody's business, and I don't know if because again it could be a side effect of this male dominated depression I'm talking about. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
but regardless,
prevalent in
look,
this movie.
Not always do things come out bad from bad things. Sometimes a little extra nice comes out of it, which is your mom makes nobody makes cookies like she does, you know.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there's a huge chunk of, you know, people that grew up in the 70s and 80s who just don't care and they're not great cooks.
Well, you know, both of my parents were great cooks, and I always realize I learned something from them that you can't get any other way. And I just want to share this with the world. World, when it comes to cooking, you can never use too much salt, sugar, or fat. That's all there is to it.
It's a true story. It does
Bill
make
Durand
the bacon fantastic.
Disagree.
I know. I'm the anti-Bill Durand in this particular...
He didn't say anything about being healthy. He just said when you bake it.
You're trying to impress people with food. Salt, sugar, and fat go crazy.
Let them be healthy on their own time.
And I realize this is the era for the back to the whole man's in charge of everything and you can't do crap without him kind of time. But it still just feels so foreign to me. Like
It was even near the end when he's the one doing all the realizing, he's the one doing all the talking, he's the one doing all the holding. It's like he's the man with five arms. He's holding everybody close to him. Arms.
That's a better
Much
movie,
better
dude.
Title.
Yeah, way better movie. Right? The man with five arms. Oh, by the way, this guy's like 42 making this in this movie. He looks 59 to 62. No. This guy.
Yeah. He was not
looks older.
That was one of those old timey lies.
He was absolutely 42. Brian
he
and
was
I went
one of those old timey lies. Like
12. My friend.
No.
Born in 1912.
No, he was born in the 1800s.
I'm afraid not. No, this man, I mentioned it earlier, he was the original Marlboro man. I'm not talking about Don Johnson from the 80s when he did the movie with the Harley Davis. I'm talking about the original advertising magazine ads of the Marlboro man. He was the original one. And no, I think that shows.
You're going to look at this man in this movie and tell me he was under the age of 50 when he made it.
The man was
not only that, he died in 1969 at the age of 57. He wasn't even 60 before the 70s.
That's what I'm getting at. See, there was a lie about when he was born. Sports all the time. Every athlete in every major sport is 4 inches shorter than they're listed. This is what they used to do with actors.
But if his birthday on here, which says where he was born, what year, what day, and all that, all of that is suspect, then I would argue all birthdays are suspect because this doesn't seem like anything too weird. I mean,
yeah, I don't know it. Not this far
I'm
down the line.
At a 55-year-old man. You're telling me he's 42. There's no way.
I'm telling you, people looked older.
He looked 40.
Scott,
he does
yourself
not look 42.
In the mirror and then tell me he's younger.
No, I completely agree with you, dude. That's my whole point. I think that A, you're right. It doesn't look right. B, they just look older then. Like there's times I'll see any old movie and go, oh my gosh, How did a guy who's supposed to be 32 look that old? You'll see old photos from like the Civil War. It's like, here's General Williamson von Treacle or whatever. And he was a hell of a fighter and he did all these things. I'm like, oh, look at that grizzled old man, he says. And he's shown in this photo at age 23. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
You know, General Williamson von Treacle was given that gun with the golden bullets. You know that.
I'm telling you, Randy, I live in the South.
It's the
where
symbolism
we believe,
there.
Right? Well, I live in the South where we believe in cooking with lard and the salt and the sugar like you mentioned earlier, and people smoking all of their lives. And I have many schoolmates who I went to school with that I will see out in public and go, oh, my God, are you 60? Yeah. Because they hard living, man, hard living.
But there are two things you cannot escape if you do them to your skin. One is smoke and the other is spend a lot of time in the sun. So maybe this guy did both of those. It's just hard. Even his voice sounds like a 70-year-old.
Well, he died at 57, which is pretty early, and I want to say it was smoking related. I can't find it, but he did look like a guy that could put down a pack of Winstons without blinking.
Mm-hmm.
He did like to wear his pants nice and high.
Oh, yes.
Right up to the armpits.
That will kill you right away.
But he's that build. There's that build of a man that I don't think exists anymore.
Barrel chested. We still have those here.
Name the guy. Who looks like that today?
Locally, man, I'm telling you. Barrel chested guys. This guy, he could live in the South easily.
Well, he's from Alabama, so
he's on his way up to Myrtle Beach to play some golf.
I have some coworkers who are barrel chested, but you're absolutely right. You don't see them on TV or in the movies.
No, they don't let them.
Every now and then you see a barrel chested man delivering the local news.
Right.
Still, that's still a thing.
You know, Robin Williams was kind of that kind of guy. He was barrel-chested.
You know, that's actually a good point. He kind of had that build, didn't he?
Right, he did.
So many people, he was always trying to stay skinnier than his body wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
That can make you look
kind of worked that out in Popeye, but not really since then. And speaking of which, we think we'll probably get some. We got to line up some Robin Williams movies that that are sackable. It feels weird that we've only done one movie he was ever in. We got to get like Toys or something up in here.
We had a little debate about Hook, and our listeners also seem to be having a little debate about Hook. I still think that's a reasonable movie for us.
I may have turned a corner on that. I could probably do Hook now. It's weird because it's kind of in light of his death that I could do Hook now in a weird way.
Right.
I don't know why that is. I think I just he's still with us, so he'll always do something better than Hook. But now he's not here anymore, so maybe Hook's fine. I don't know. It's a weird. I had a weird turn on Hook when they announced that he had died. I will say that Birdcage is on streaming, and everyone should be watching that right now.
Ooh, oh, yes, that's a good one.
Well, I watched Aladdin the other night.
Yeah,
and man, I wish there were so many more movies like that. Why aren't they making more movies like that?
I agree.
They don't make them like that anymore.
But seriously, though, Aladdin is nothing but two comedians, Robin Williams and Gilbert Gottfried, just riffing.
I forgot about Gilbert Gottfried
the
being
parrot.
In there.
That's the freaking parody's great in that. I forgot all about that. That's a great movie, just period. It's just fun. It's good.
Bringing comedy to life in that animation.
A whole new world.
Comedians in the desert getting wishes.
Ranked. Yeah.
But seriously, like the Planes movies, movies star Dane Cook, but he plays a straight man. He's not funny at all.
No, he's really gay. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Don't want to out him on this show. Everything's fine. Everything's fine, Dane Cook. So what else here? I have another trope. Here's one. Even though it's kind of true, no one talks about the war. You know what I'm saying? It is kind of true, though. Like, people who served in the war, like frontline Marine dudes in the war, they rarely talk. My grandpa wouldn't talk about it, no matter what you said. Grandpa, tell us stories. And he wouldn't.
It was considered uncouth. You didn't expose the innocent here in the U.S. Which
you think that's what the motivation was? Because I think it was he saw some really terrible things did not want to talk about it.
I think we're saying the same thing. I think that he saw some really terrible things, and he fought to protect everybody from seeing those terrible things. And I think that fight continued on to to protect.
But that so you was, think that was it was totally an, you think it was an altruistic thing though, and I'm saying I think it was a psychological scarring and nothing to do with them trying to protect anybody.
Well,
from
we didn't really understand post traumatic syndrome back during that time, and you know it wasn't okay.
That's right. See, they called it shell shock. See,
you weren't allowed to act crazy unless you totally were batshit crazy, like you know, just out of your mind.
Yeah,
and
but seeing this
time.
Seeing this scene where he finally reveals to his wife that this man that's been living on their property for 50 years is, you know, is special to him for special reasons, that feels all wrong. Wrong.
Really? I thought it felt right. I felt like he'd done his friend wrong, Carl, but I felt like it was true to how people were.
But, okay. I want to believe that that relationships weren't as disconnected as
right.
We seem to think they were more than 30 or 50 years ago. Yeah. Like I just
one-sided, I think, or at least not. They were. I'd say they were different. They were just, like you said, maybe more one-sided. More.
Yeah.
Man's in control and.
Yeah, the mores were in place pretty hard.
Yeah.
And you stray out of that. You know,
you'll find out what Carl is doing on our property when I'm good and ready to tell you.
Yeah, like that.
Now I'm hungry. If you ladies are done hugging,
and my dad's dad and my mom's dad, they were totally of this ilk. Like,
oh, absolutely.
This whole era thing. This is exactly who those people were. And you know, Grandpa would sit there and watch, like, you know, Maverick episodes or something, and I would say, Grandpa, why don't you come play with us, or can I see pictures of you from World War II?
Why are you crying?
Yeah, what's the matter, Maverick? Grandpa?
What's wrong, Grandpa?
Why are you stabbing somebody named Charlie? Whatever. And I guess that was Vietnam. But anyway, the point is this. He just seemed to have this shroud like that and was afraid to say anything. And I don't know. It was always, as a kid even, I just felt like, what's the problem with Grandpa? And my dad was so different from that. He was so open and, you know, it was emotionally healthy
absolutely.
That way.
The baby boomers were definitely rebelling against how their parents, the greatest generation, were raising them, which was, you know, to protect the family from all that stuff. And to,
you think Tom Brokaw loves that everyone uses his name for the greatest generation all the time? Do you think you think he sits around reveling in that? Because now it's like Kleenex or Band-Aid. Like, that's what people, the greatest generation. It's like, oh, I feel pretty good about everybody saying the thing I came up with.
I think actually it's personal experience that informs what I'm talking about. Because my grandfather had four brothers who served in World War II. My grandfather was the youngest, so he was the person who didn't go to the war by the Johnson rule.
Yeah.
And
the
Johnson rule?
I thought you were making fun of me.
was it the Ryan rule, and that's why the movie's called Saving Private? No, it's the Johnson. It was the Johnson family that lost all their sons.
Yes, and they were from Utah, which is funny. The Private like Ryan the thing.
Yeah. So anyway, my grandfather was the only one of five boys that didn't go to World War II, and I remember talking to some of my great uncles about it, and some of them were a lot more talkative than others.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like there was some hard rule that if you went to war, you came back and didn't tell anybody anything.
Oh, sure. Right. It's I mean, obviously you can blanket statement the whole thing, but I there are always exceptions. I only have one Johnson rule, and it has to do with the gym and old men, but that's a different thing.
From the greatest generation?
Yeah, from the greatest generation to Johnson, to your ear.
Put some pants on. Quit walking around like that.
We don't do that anymore.
Let's do some clips. We got clips. You guys want to hear clips?
Oh, yeah. Dude. Please tell me you're not going to play Agonizing Loud Sounds.
Just hang in there. We'll see what you think about this. Here's some bad, very early, very bad, and very angry acting from the mom. Here you go.
That's it. Run away. You haven't got the courage to... Oh!
My souffle. Hey. It's not good. So flat.
Caroline. Oh, get out.
Get out. You made me ruin my souffle.
Where's the microphone? Is it in a can somewhere? Because I can't hear anything. Terrible sound work in this movie, even for the 50s, man. Plenty of 50s movies that sound just fine. There's something going on here that's just real bad. All right, here's him with the what? I would him always what hing? Oh, it's
what
him.
Hing?
Sorry,
what
it's
hing?
Him always watching. Sorry,
what hing?
I think I spelled watching wrong. All right, here it is. Here you go.
We might as well be on another planet. Oh, Alan, without Sandy, I don't know what would happen to me. It's just you and me and him. Always watching.
They cut to that little bitty window, and he's got his face in that window, and he's got his mouth agape. Bah, 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 bah.
That's great.
Yeah, I don't care what Dad says, that he does not look harmless.
No.
No.
One day he's going to snap.
And you know what? Maybe it's all the whatever, all the fears pounded into us in a modern society. But when he's down at the lake watching what's her name out there swimming,
yeah.
I'm just thinking he's a molester rapist man.
Exactly.
And in the he's 50s, just they for just an go. What yeah. they say in the 50s? Do they just look at that and go, oh, he's
a pervert.
He's a peeping Tom.
Mutes are consistently misunderstood to be perverts.
That's right. Everyone thinks they're looking at their boobs. Really, what they're doing is standing, just helping them. Like, I kept expecting the Gentle Giant story to come out of this.
Right.
Which is like, oh, in the end, she saved him. And I guess he kind of did because he returned her.
Right.
Yeah. But
what little bit of his brain he had left, he returned.
That was dumb, dude. Whatever. Yeah. Here's the what? Oh, get the weird guy out. Okay. All right.
Why doesn't he ever go away on his day off?
Oh.
You know, does he ever go away on his day off? They always ask about Randy. Well, Randy, go
any place
away.
To go.
What's his day off? From what? Oh, from the ranch handing?
Yeah.
Right.
From,
yeah.
From date handling.
That day was his day off, and instead of taking a walk in the hills, he's looking out his window at them.
All right. The girl's cute. Don't get me wrong. By the way, she only did one thing ever, and it was this movie.
Yeah, she was definitely the one person that was not really a classically trained actor, in my opinion, no. in this movie.
Little on the nasal delivery, too. I hope we've got her in the clips.
Absolutely. She reminded me, she had that voice that sounded like she should have been in like a Rocky and Bullwinkle kind of show or something. Did you guys kind of pick up that?
Yeah, a little bit. Totally. I like her. I liked her as she was attractive and stuff, but then she'd talk and you go, oh, what are you doing in here? How'd they get you?
They said they were originally from somewhere else, but right. if they hadn't said that, I would have just hated her because she sounds like she's from Wisconsin.
I left it open, so you never know, man.
There they are in Southern California.
Yeah. She's a cheesehead. You just didn't know it.
Don't you know?
Here's the most annoying sound in the movie. Brace yourselves, okay? Because this is bad. Here it is. Oh, boy. Listeners are going to hate us. Oh, shite. Hold on, just a little bit more.
Brown note.
Gosh. I apologize, for real.
That was the coffee pot scene where everything exploded that was glass in the house. Yeah. And
she cowered and did the forearm protector again.
She totally did. And she said husband or whatever his name was. His name, Jack?
Paul. But no.
Paul?
No.
Banana.
No.
Banana man.
Jimmy. What was Jimmy it? John.
Jimmy John.
Dick.
On. Dick.
It's not Dick. Alan
was his name.
Alan.
So she.
Alan.
Like the goat in that video.
I was actually kind of curious how they blew that pot up because I kept looking at her hand to see if she did something to initiate some kind of 1950s squib kind of thing, or if somebody if they had like a little kid off screen with a slingshot.
The new 1950s squib kind of thing.
Right? What was it?
But yeah, I mean, it's just a firecracker in that thing, right?
You think it's a firecracker in there?
As long as it's good and sealed up, it's going to burst.
That's
right?
True. Yeah.
Under coffee?
The firecrackers were good then, dude. They were. Oh, that was the business. Those blow people's hands off, and they'd be proud of it.
And apparently, actors didn't mind special effects being right on their face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't mind that stuff. Come on. They're professionals. Here's one. Come down from there.
Come down from there. What are you doing up there? Come down.
Come down from
there.
What are you doing up there?
It's actually not perfectly Wisconsin. It's more like Saskatchewan.
That's true. Hold on.
Come down from there.
It's definitely got.
Come down from there.
A little more Canadian.
Hey, how's it going, eh? Come down from there. I'm sorry. Get down from the tree.
I need to hear her say the word hoser.
Some poutine. I love it. You just wedge a nice stereotype in there with no context. Come down from there, have some poutine. That's brilliant. Blackbirds attacking a man. Have you ever had experience with that? Well, here you go.
Did you ever hear of a blackbirds attacking a man?
Have you ever heard of a blackbird?
Wait a minute. No, never.
The way he phrased it, though, have you ever heard of a blackbirds? Right, attacking
Let's hear it again.
All right, here. Here. Well, here you go.
Did you ever hear of a Blackbirds attacking a man?
Did you ever hear of a blackbirds attacking a man?
It's a little, it's like a little residual noise after his of Did you hear of blackbirds attacking a man?
I mean, they recorded it on like what, wax cylinders? I don't know what the hell they were doing in there.
They were definitely blackbirds. They did not like those entering their territory. Some sort of turf thing.
I wouldn't like being thrown around if I was a bird.
I wouldn't either, dude.
There was no birds being thrown around, I don't believe.
Well, there were eight of them coming at me every 5 seconds in the same
pattern.
Yeah, the same eight.
Launched out of a basket.
Here's screams. So there's some good screaming for you. Here you go. Oh, gosh. Oh, good Lord. Oh! Jeez, someone go chickens. Finally get her, dude.
Somebody think of the chickens.
Yeah, no, some no,
one
right?
star reviews in iTunes this week.
All right, this one I have titled "Lock Up Your Shit." Okay, I don't know what this is. Here we go.
Oh, Sandy, I want you to close your shutters tonight.
But I won't be able to breathe in there.
And lock them too, baby.
Then don't be farting in there or wherever you're doing.
The best part,
what are you so worried about?
The best part is her bit at the end right here.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
There's a lot of little stuff like that. I don't know if you got it, but there's a part near the very end where the alien's talking, and they just left in some sounds he makes for no reason.
Oh, no, I missed that part. Beep, beginning? Blop, bloop. I missed that. I would have. I'm not going to go back, though. I can tell you that. I'm not going back. Not going back.
All right. No second viewing of this film.
What's up with the crows? Here you go.
There was one big bird, a crow, I think.
They must have flown directly to the car.
What do you mean? From where?
They attacked me in the grove. The big bird, the crow, I think he led them. He flew away, and then they all followed him.
They all hollered him?
Scott
followed
Johnson, him. Kingpin bird theory.
Yeah, there you go. Followed him?
Followed him.
Well, that's not good. It should be followed him.
Sounds like he's right out of East Texas.
Followed him.
Followed.
Yeah.
You know that bird? He followed him out of the grove.
Followed him. I had to climb out the window.
Son of a bitch, honey. Where the hell's that souffle?
I'm starving. Quit hugging.
Quit hugging. Get off me. Can't you do shit for yourself? Like, let's rewrite this movie.
Where I don't think we have daughter? To. I think that's pretty much what they said. I
mean, you know, my creepy army buddy got a whole lot of porn in that there shed.
Hold on a sec. Let me call Larry, see if he's still standing in front of that placemat map of the United States you got at Denny's.
That's right.
That old West looking map. I love that thing with all the, you know, the cowboys on it. Right. It was great.
Here's Cactus. That must be Arizona.
Yeah. I'm taking this improv version over the movie any day. What we just did was better than the film. All right. Here's Darren Stevens doing his thing.
Hello. Alan Kelly, huh? Well, connect me with him now.
I'm gay. All right.
Bob Newhart's old joke, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was totally doing Newhart.
You said Bob Newhart did this better? And the
By the way, if anyone hasn't heard it, I'm kind of a depends on who he's talking to kind of guy, but Mark Maron's WTF podcast, he just did an interview with Bob Newhart. Mm-hmm. Fan-freaking-tastic. Yeah. That guy is awesome. He's like 89 or something. Yeah. Sharp as a tack, never at a loss for something to say that's funny, and fabulous stories. That was an amazing conversation. People should totally listen to it.
He still got it.
He's great.
Just listen to the Nerdist interview with Tom Cruise, which is an incredible get for Chris Hardwick.
I'd say.
It's
a great. It was a great interview. It was really, really good. Yeah.
Was it? Did you talk about the couch thing and how stupid that
not.
Was?
He did not, but there's still 10 minutes left that I haven't listened to, but... It just talked about the craft and getting to meet the people that, you know, he grew up watching, like Dustin Hoffman and Jack Nicholson, and being the fanboy to them.
Oh, and then being in the movie with him, yeah.
Yeah.
Did he talk about why he runs so much in movies?
Why he runs so weird in his tooth?
Yeah. And you talk about his tooth in the middle of his head, like all the things we want to know.
You can't handle the tooth.
by the way, if you look at Mark Maron's feed for his WTF podcast, after the Bob Newhart show, he put up a Remembering Robin Williams episode.
Yeah, it was a rerun.
Where he basically just replays his episode with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And everybody should listen to that.
Yeah, it's really
required
good.
Required listening.
Yeah, I agree. It's really good. It's the best window into the whole Robin Williams thing anyway, period. Like with all this memorial stuff, that stuff's really sugared up. This is not sugared up. It's really interesting. It's the good and the dark and what's going on in that guy's head. And it's not him just spazzing out like he does on TV and stuff. It's him just having a real good conversation. And if you want to hear Mark Maron get super emotional, there's your episode right there.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Here you go. That girl is really bad.
You certainly turn up at the darndest times. Where have you been? Everybody's been so worried and looking for you. What's the matter? You look so... As long as you're here, you can help me find Larry.
Is she drunk? I mean, she sounds drunk.
Yeah, as long as you're here, you open this bottle for me. It's,
hey, man.
It's almost like Rick Moranis is a woman.
Exactly.
Hey, it's, over here, I've got the shrimp. You get shrimp flown in from Nova Scotia. It's really good. Over here. Are you the keymaster?
Oh. I'm Goozer. Who are you?
Yeah, she's weird. She got a weird voice. I don't know what that accent is. I couldn't place it, but I know I've heard it.
It's straight up Saskatchewan. It's right up the middle of Canada.
These French fries look like spiders, man.
All right. Let's do how do you eat? How do you eat?
We, shall I be specific, feed on brains.
Nice.
Should
maybe
I be specific? Feed on brains.
I'm going to speak into this large barrel. And hope it comes out okay. Here's a bad scream. All right.
Oh.
Yeah. That was a lady. Yeah.
A lady in a trumpet.
Uh-huh. It's a great Disney film.
Lady in a trumpet.
And then Scott Fletcher rounds us out with something funny, I thought. He just kind of riffing. Here it is. Here you go.
The Beast with a Million Eyes. Why, just last week I had my entire car millionized. And it smells great.
Yeah, it does. Millionized. Actually sounds like a thing you could do to your car.
It does.
Ladies and gentlemen, that leads us to this. Oh, it's the Film Sack Checklist, and this is half-assed as hell. So here you go. People doing animal voices, check. 1950s porno neighbor, check. Stupid intro narrator from your 1950s horror movie, check. Remember they were all doing that back then? Like the Plan from Nine from Outer Space, all that stuff was doing that. So dumb. Star Trek stuff. Not a single soul worked on Star Trek in any capacity, according to Daryl. He did a bunch of digging.
I can believe it. I mean, this was... Yeah.
He says 20 total people made this film, from production crew to actors. Director,
everybody was fired by the time Star Trek came around. So
yeah, I guess so. And nobody lived long enough or was big enough in Hollywood to continue to do anything for Trek later. So that's what that is right there. The soundtrack, I would give it a WS for what soundtrack? I didn't think there was much.
It was all public domain stuff. It was it's like, what can we use?
Yeah.
Yeah, you played a clip where she's talking about the mute guy and suddenly some music swells.
Yep.
That was it. That was the whole soundtrack.
That was... Here, right here.
It might as well be on another him always watching.
Yeah, that's so.
Yeah, and it's so reminiscent of dun 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 dun. You know, like the Wagner.
Oh,
sure.
Right, right. Valkyries. What is that? That's not it. You're right, though. That's
yeah,
Wagner.
But there's something very, very familiar about that.
Yeah, it probably was. I did notice a few times it would play, and I'd go, "Oh, we're dipping into classical here because that's cheap." But they never played it long enough to know what the hell they were doing. Mm-hmm. I wonder if people were fooled by that. I wouldn't have been.
No, nobody.
Not even in the 50s, see? My woman knew what to do. She was in her place, see? I don't know why they're mobsters. All right.
They're 20s mobsters.
Let's get into the Twitter posts where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
The Beast with a Million Eyes. Now I only have 107 characters left. Oh, crap. Now I only have 70. Wait, only 40? Oh, dude. Whoops. Damn it.
I hope it was an abbreviated damn it. I like that idea.
DMT.
Brian Dunaway.
Ah, yes. The Beast with a Million Eyes. Where are my other 999,999,97? How many eyes? I forget. Shut up, Carl.
Nice. Don't do drugs. All right. Finally. Brian Ebert.
The Beast with a Million Eyes. I kept throwing dead blackbirds at the power coupling outside, but it didn't make this movie stop playing.
Oh, no, it did not.
Did kill my phone.
You would think it might work. All right, well, let's just hand it to me. We have alternate titles for this film. We have two of them. One is, quote, shit, and the other is, quote, garbage. All right, great.
Well, that's interesting. I think between those two, I would go see garbage.
Yeah, I'd probably see garbage.
They're okay. They're still playing. They're still
tour. Oh, yeah. Butch Vig and...
What was her name?
Shirley Manson.
Shirley Manson. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
She, yeah. She's fine. She's not related to Charles Manson, right?
Not at all.
How about to Charles Nelson Reilly? That's got nothing to do with Manson. Yeah,
the brother on her mother's cousin's side.
Got it. Perfect.
How about Marilyn Manson? Close.
Yeah. Who? Marilyn Manson?
Marilyn Manson. Yeah.
Could lady? Be. No. You never know. Dear FilmSack crew, says Evan, who sent us an email. We do emails on the show, and here's one. Dear FilmSack crew, you had a discussion of Boss Hogg's political position, and as a 40-something native of Georgia, I thought I would add a little more information. Georgia is unique in that it has a form of government known as a sole commissioner county commission. Basically, one man holds all legislative and executive power for the whole county, hence he is the boss of the county. It's an archaic system, and yet many smaller countries, counties in Georgia still have a boss that often looks like Sorrel Book. as of note, as Randy pointed out in the first five episodes of show where the show was filmed in the town of Covington, then filming was moved to California. Oh, that's interesting. So it was actually filmed in the South and then moved to California. Finally, many locations from the Covington shows are still around. I've attached two links of a local website, blah, blah, blah. We can't really see those on the radio. But they also did the location shooting for Smokey and the Bandit. The sites compare how they looked and how they appear now. As you can see, in many cases, the area has changed a great deal, and in some, not at all. Keep up the great work on the show. Evan, two things. One, I love intelligent, fun fact emails.
Right.
You are emblematic of those. So keep those coming, and those trying to think of what they send us by gum, Evan German. Secondly.
Two, you're a little too smart for your own good.
That's
go
right.
Home.
Go home, smarty pants, four eyes. No, I just want to say that I cannot believe that this is still a thing, that that you could have a county boss, and he could be the guy that makes all your big decisions. It's one fat guy in a suit who can just run the whole joint. That's crazy to me.
Sounds right to me.
It's pretty crazy.
I mean, there's no like, it sounds like a little warlord, doesn't it? Like,
sounds right.
There's
Come
no
on.
Council. There's no, I don't know. Representative government that I know of, if a guy named Boss Hogg can just slam his fist down and say, you know,
did you not watch Nothing But Trouble? Did you not watch the
I guess
movie?
I did watch it. Yeah. Oh, was that what he was supposed to be?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was the boss of them. He was the
only
constable.
For
he
some
was everything.
Reason in Pennsylvania.
That's right. That was Pennsylvania.
Or was it Jersey?
I think it was Pennsylvania, and it was close. It just had to be close to New York. That's all.
Right.
So they could drive to it.
God, let's not ever talk about that movie again.
Pennsylvania. Well, it did get
Seriously.
Us one of the greatest things ever, which was this.
Squirini.
Right? You don't want a life. You don't want a world without that.
I don't
want
to live in a world without Squirini.
But I'm with you, Randy. We're done with that. That movie sucked. We're never going to go back.
No.
Our next film, a movie that does not suck. You guys are going to have to tell me, is this the newish one or the one that... Well, anyway, it's The Legend of the Drunken Master.
This is an older movie.
Is it the old one?
It's an older Jackie Chan movie. It's streaming on Netflix.
Okay.
Legend of Drunken Master.
Is there a new one? Because Iceworm is like, I think there's a new one. Like, I don't think there's a new one.
Is that how he talks?
Is he from the 1920s also?
My understanding is there's a new one, see?
There's a new one, see?
Poor Iceworm.
Legend of... Okay, of Drunken Master. Yeah, it's this 94 thing. Right?
Did it have
I know there's Drunken Master 1 and 2.
Son in it? Is that what you're thinking of?
No, that's that's a Karate Kid.
Yep.
I think the 94 is all we get.
Called The Master of the Drunken Legend.
This is it. It's 20 years old. That's it.
Okay, that's the one.
That's what you get.
Yeah, that's what we're having. So we're bringing Jackie Chan back. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Right? Because we'll have some bad voiceover, and I'm not excited about that. So watch for that. That's on Netflix. You can view it now, The Legend of Drunken Master. And, of course, today's film is also on Netflix as well.
Mm-hmm. Go watch it.
Yeah.
Turn up the sound.
Right on, brother. Preach it is what I should say. Hey, filmsack.com, that's where you can find us. Go there. You can find our show notes. People leave comments there all the time. Lots of great arguments and conversations happen there. So we're always encouraging that. And good Lord, the Minority Report thread went big.
That was fun.
It was fun. Enjoyed the hell out of that. I'm glad most other people did. A few people thought we were going to murder one another, but
we tweeted at you to go comment, and you did. And I hope you do some more commenting on our blog.
Agreed. A lively conversation there is always welcome. FilmSack.com is the place. Email us, FilmSack@gmail.com. And on Twitter, you can find the show @FilmSack. Leave us a review on iTunes and where other podcasts are distributed. We'd love that.
We're also on Stitcher, you big dummies. Go get it there.
Stitcher.
That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you next time. Nothing?
Carl?
Oh, there we go.
No, we were all being the mute guy.
Oh, yeah, we were mute. Nice.
You're young for me.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.